This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling, indies, and international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Tim. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, doing fantastic. Still recovering from a little PWG flu somewhat. Not too bad, but I always get a little sick from PWG in general, it seems. Other wrestling shows, not as bad. I think it's because the building's so cramped and they don't run the air conditioner.
Yeah, it probably wasn't a bunch of people sweaty and all that stuff, too.
And people coming from out of town.
Yeah, and you're cramped in there, you know what I'm saying? It's not like you have a lot of space.
Yeah, no, that's definitely it. But all in all, feeling pretty good. Pete, how you doing?
Doing good. Why don't you tell us about the show, man? How was it?
Oh, it was pretty good. It was solid return to form, I think. I was told, because I missed the last show, I was told that the last show picked up as well. Kind of got back on track after some people were a little disappointed at Mystery Vortex. Solid stuff. The opening three-way was a repeat of the three-way that they did in a similar fashion. It was supposed to be Cage versus Keith Lee, and at Future Stars of Wrestling in Vegas, it was supposed to be Sami Callihan, I think, versus Davey Richards. Davey Richards no-shows. So Sami Callihan injects himself into the Keith Lee versus Cage match, turns it into a three-way. So, you know, they announce at the beginning of the show, Sami Callihan doesn't have a match, so we're going to let him do whatever he wants. He shows up first thing and says, I'm going to be in this three-way match. They had a good match. It was really interesting for me when you have Cage and Keith Lee, and it seemed to be Sami Callihan was the one who was going up the heaviest, and it was like, you know, kind of botching spots from being awkward and not as agile. So that was interesting, but I think Callihan did a good job there, kind of really keeping the match together. As I always say, his pump kicks don't do anything for me. So him trying to throw pump kicks to Keith Lee, it looks like they are barely hitting him at the nipple level, and we're supposed to believe that he's got knockout power with that. It just doesn't work for me. But solid match. Then from there, it, you know, continues on. There's the Chosen Bros, Riddle and Cobb versus OI4K, the Crist Brothers. Another really solid match that I think some people were complaining that it felt like the Crists took too much in the beginning when it comes to like just selling and bumping around. And I was kind of like, well, what the fuck do you expect when they're going up against these two just masters of grappling who are just like unbeatable? And you got Jeff Cobb, who's insanely strong. It wouldn't have made any sense to have the Crists come in to start and be anywhere near their level. You know, so to me, it worked that in that way that they really built the match up well around making sure that the Chosen Bros really shined and that the Crists were able to get some offense, show off some of their spots, but realistically they had nothing on these guys. Leo Rush, Trevor Lee, possibly match of the night depending on what you're looking for. Really good stuff. I think Trevor really kept Leo from going a little bit too overboard, which is something that I saw him continue to do moving on, but not a lot of heat. And I was told that at the last showing, similar thing happened for Leo Rush. He just doesn't, there's something about his style, and I've mentioned it before, that it's really hard for the crowds to get engaged, it seems.
I think people think he's an asshole. I mean, he looks like an asshole.
That's part of it. I think it's hard to buy him as a babyface because he comes across as a cocky little asshole. Trevor is starting to turn face somewhat because the crowd's just behind him, which I think is really interesting, and I even posited to some people, I think if PWG wants to tell a story, they have a pretty built-in one there here that now that you have Zack Sabre Jr.'s turned heel and Trevor Lee was initially the anti-foreigner babyface but is now our heel, is now starting to turn face. If you have them flip-flopped and you have Trevor Lee be the one to end up taking the belt off of Zack in a pro-American fashion against the heel Zack Sabre Jr., it could actually be kind of a really funny thing that turns everything on its ear. It kind of sucks with the political climate, but the idea that you wouldn't expect a California indie, especially not PWG, to be running kind of a xenophobic pro-America angle in 2017, but it almost seems like it could work out. From there, Strickland and Desmond, I thought, really delivered strong. I heard some other people not like it, but I was very into it because I'm high on Strickland, super high on Desmond. I think that these guys were insanely smooth. Some of their stuff looked very capoeira, dance fighting, but, I mean, I'm into it. I like it. I think that they did it pretty well. Desmond Xavier's a guy who, I think, until you see him live, you're not really impressed with his physique because he is quite small, but God, he packs a ton of muscle on that tiny little frame. The guy's just yoked out, huge shoulders, really defined, chiseled, and just can hit moves from anywhere, out of nowhere, everything. You got Shane Strickland again, who I think is really well-versed at a lot of different styles. And then what I think was clearly the match of the night, really, I think, just for having storyline, action, everything, Best Friends versus Leaders of the New School. Another one that I think, again, as I said, storyline really helps here. The heel work from Saber and Skrull together as a team is phenomenal. With Saber really playing kind of the bad influence, or Skrull playing the bad influence on Saber, really trying to teach him to be maniacal. Trent just goes above and beyond. I mean, Trent is the overachiever of the wrestling world in 2017, it feels. The guy does everything he can to always try to stand out as much, and he still and somewhat feels like he's in the background, but I think he's starting to break out and more people are starting to appreciate him. And then there's the three-way tag with the Lucha Brothers, the Young Bucks, and Matt Sydal and Ricochet. And I mean, this is exactly what you expect. They didn't go too long, which was nice. There's a lot of goofing around, a lot of chicanery, guys putting on each other's masks, guys putting on jackets, guys, you know, messing around, doing suck-its and crotch chops and every big dive you can imagine, and just so many crazy spots. And this is another one where, depending on what you're looking for, this could have been your match of the night. Again, it's not for me necessarily, but it did feel like a big deal. And having the Lucha Brothers win the tag titles, spoiler alert, I guess I already said it, but felt really important for them in PWG setting. So all in all, good show. Breezed by, got us in early, got us out early. Really felt like that they really had something behind this, and it wasn't kind of, there is a malaise that happens in PWG where you can tell that the people putting on the shows aren't that passionate about it. It felt like the passion's back here in a big way. I wouldn't say any match underdelivered. I've heard people bandy about Desmond versus Strickland as the worst match of the night. For me, if I was going to pick worst match of the night, it's the three-way, and that's just because there was a little bit of sloppiness here and there and really no story. But all in all, I mean, everything on the show, I would say, was at least good.
That sounded interesting. Now, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, first off, our buddy Chad just had a baby. Congratulations. Hope the baby gets the mother's looks and Chad's passion for wrestling. I think that'd be a good combination. Also, man, with Ring of Honor, what's going on, man? What have you been hearing?
I mean, I guess maybe they're for sale or not. Sounds very similar to a lot of the conversations that we always hear about going on back behind the scenes. I mean, there was people saying something like this with TNA and WWE up until recently. I mean, the idea that WWE is in the market to buy anything is just the case. I mean, that's how it works at this point. So why would you...
And it worked. That's how it worked back in the day, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this to me is a non-story. And I mean, I read the pro wrestling sheet, and I, just to steal a phrase from Les Moore over at Talking Sheet, from Crying Ryan, as he's complaining, or, you know, that no one ever believes his exclusive stories and everyone shits on him. I read his story on Pro Wrestling Sheet, and it was just a non-story. I mean, there's nothing to it. He's just saying they talked, they haven't made any decisions, nothing seems to be moving forward. That's it. So, I don't know. I mean, what do you think here, Pete?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm one of those guys, I'm a wait-and-see type of guy. I try not to get too excited or upset or what have you about what's going on. And it's, let's see what happens, you know?
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see a need for it. I don't see why Sinclair would want to sell it unless the price is insane. But why would Vince McMahon want to put that kind of money on it? The other part of it, too, is, as I say, why would Vince McMahon want to put that money on it? Because unless he gets something in writing that creates a non-compete situation, Sinclair could sell ROH to them today and buy AAW tomorrow. You know what I mean? And yeah. What's really the difference? Or they could, you know, they could nationally syndicate WXW. You know, they could do 100 different things. So what would be the point unless you could kind of tie the hands of Sinclair, which would be very hard because they're a big media conglomerate, and you know, they're much bigger than WWE, I don't think they're going to take a deal that's not going to be beneficial to them.
No, I'm with you completely on that. And then we hear like Kyle O'Reilly is going to make his debut for Evolve. Do you think that's kind of chicken shit for them to announce that before Mania, and he's not going to work any of the Mania shows?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that they did that at the time that they did, and then yeah, it's. And some people are saying it's Gabe, you know, being a fanboy. Oh, he's so excited. But realistically, I think it's a political move. It's a political posturing. And it's letting people know, you know, that he's already in the WWE pipeline, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I've just found a bad taste in my mouth and stuff.
Well, I don't know. Do you listen to the NXT conference calls with Triple H?
No, I do not.
Triple H was asked specifically about Kyle O'Reilly, and he kind of played it off saying, well, and the person that asked him, I think it was Meltzer even, and he asked him in a general way. He said, in general talents, but I'll just say Kyle O'Reilly specifically because he happens to be one that's, you know, on the forefront of guys who are in the limbo. What's the situation with the limbo? And then, you know, doing the kind of verbal kung fu, Triple H turns it into, well, specifically Kyle O'Reilly, I don't know his situation. I'd have to look at his contract specifically to know that. And it's like, yeah, but you didn't answer the general question. So as far as Triple H is saying, there's nothing with Kyle O'Reilly at the moment. But, I mean, that's we all know that that's just not the case.
Yeah, I'm with you completely on there. But, hey, let's move into some wrestling and stuff. We have the WXW ran 16 karat gold. I thought the three nights there were really strong wrestling. Night three in particular, I thought was incredible. What did you happen to catch all three of them?
I caught all three nights. I caught all three nights, Ambition and Inner Circle. And I think for the entire weekend, the lowest star rating I gave any match was 3 stars.
Wow.
I thought that
you liked it better than me then. Okay.
Yeah, I thought that they solidly delivered all the way through. I think I do know that you gave the final a little bit higher rating than I did, but even then, I think you might actually be right on your rating. I mean, the finals, the story that was built through, everything that was done super solidly, felt like they really came to a head. And last year's 16 karat, you know, felt like it slightly underdelivered. Ambition definitely wasn't as strong last year for WXW. This year, I mean, it was really a tour de force for everything that makes WXW something special.
Yeah, let's talk about Walter. I thought he had just an incredible tournament. Would you agree with me that he was the MVP of the tournament?
Oh yeah, I mean, coming down to the finals the way that he did, even you know the matches that he had on Inner Circle and Ambition were all. It's all about placing people in a certain spot. It's all about making the overall storyline make sense. I mean, he's the thing that lends the credibility to the main heel faction. I mean, the guy is just, I mean, he's the MVP of the company. And then, so then when you turn around and you have a company that's this on fire, that kind of makes him an MVP of wrestling in general.
Yeah. And the thing I find interesting is Walter, we will call him a big man. He's a hoss, right?
Yeah. As I've said before, I find him to be the closest thing we have to like a modern day Andre the Giant character. Cause I don't think anybody else carries themselves the same way.
Yeah. I mean, he's a high end guy. Like, he reminds me of like Terry Gordy or Big Van Vader in that type of sense. He's Stan Hansen, big epic brawler. Why is it nowadays? Is it harder? Because I was blown away because we don't get that style of match very often. Or when we do, I mean, it's good, but not this epic. And this was a great epic big man brawl fight. And we had, great babyface selling. I mean, it had a little bit of everything and timing of the comebacks and the hope spots. But you know what? It's now in today's environment, it's a lot easier to go out and have a really find it. It's a lot easier to find a great high spot oriented matches versus a hoss fight, which in theory you think would be easier to do.
I think it really comes down to being greedy. And I think that that's what makes Walter stand out. I mean, he talked about it just recently. He was on Flash Morgan Webster's podcast, and he's asking him about protecting his brand, protecting his character, and Walter said, I care less about that than I do about protecting the company, protecting wrestling. He said, I want people to be able to make a living in wrestling, and high spot oriented wrestling gets the crowd to pop. They remember you. You stand out. It's a big deal. You're the most important thing. You're the center of attention. What Walter does, that's why you and me are kind of praising what he did here. But a lot of other people, Walter flies under the radar because in a Walter match, he doesn't always stand out. He's not necessarily the star of the match. I mean, we could talk about the finals of this with Ilya Dragunov. Walter was this, you know, Ilya Dragunov was banging his head into a wall, but realistically, I mean, at the end of the day, this match was all about Ilya, and even though Walter looked amazing and indestructible, he wasn't getting any of the shine, he wasn't getting any of the big stuff. His main weapon was the huge chop that was just busting Ilya's chest open to the point like where it was bleeding.
Yeah. Disgusting.
Super disgusting, but at the end of the day, I mean, can you pick out any other big Walter moves there? No. Like, it's just the chop, and that's why...
Chop, and I think he snaps off a pretty nasty boot.
Yeah, and some, you know, he may do a throw here and there, but realistically, Walter did very little, and it made the match epic and fantastic, and it put all the shine on Ilya, but so many big guys, and I love Keith Lee, but Keith Lee doing big dives to the floor does nothing for anybody but Keith Lee. And you can't blame the guy because he wants to be a star, but realistically, Keith Lee could slow down and work the exact same match as Walter, but then the problem would be he wouldn't be the one getting the glory, you know? And that's why you don't see this. Walter cares more about glorifying WXW than he does really care about glorifying Walter.
Yeah, because he got the story over, and it was just this is a tournament where he hangs his hat on, and I thought it puts him I tweeted about it. I think it puts him in instant contention for a wrestler of the year right off this tournament.
This, the work that he's been doing with Ring Comp all year already, and then
right, and there's other stuff to hang, you know, like the Ring Comp stuff. Him and Axel Dieter Jr. have been fantastic as a tag team.
Yeah, so it's like all of that already exists, but yes, this tournament and the performance that he did over this weekend really does put him in a level all its own where you kind of do have to talk about him. I mean, Walter's a guy, too, if you go through his history, has been having great matches in WXW for years. He's a guy that, you know, GWE 2026 or whatever is a guy that should be in your conversation for sure, who maybe didn't get enough talk on the last one.
Exactly, exactly. So, obviously, we both love the tournament, and we both like the ambition. The thing I think I like most about ambition is, the one thing I don't like about it is it comes across as pretty samey. I'd rather them, I understand them doing why they do an ambition tournament, but I think it'd be neat if they do an ambition style match on each show, because then I think it stands out and gets over more, because it seemed like a lot of it was, when I was watching it, a lot of it got kind of samey. What are your thoughts here?
I agree with you there. I think that part of the problem with this ambition as well is that, they did a good job in some ways matching up guys who were similar, but the problem is that a lot of their guys on this show had similar backgrounds. So Bobby Guns, David Starr, both are kind of doing Olympic Greco-Roman grappling style. You have them up against each other to start out. And it's, in some ways it's smart because it takes them out of the equation. So you have one less kind of amateur style guy at the end of it. And if you would put, let's say you put David Starr against whoever, Speedball, or one of the few strikers that you have in the tournament, and then David Starr wins, then now you've just cut out one of the few strikers. So it's kind of smart in that regard. And then I think that they did a good job. Cobb, Walter, another one where they're the big Haas guys. They're both more amateur throws and suplex style. So having them go against each other early does a similar effect. But realistically, the problem here is that, I mean, when we go through the first round, Riddle versus Speedball was a real breath of fresh air because they were the only guys who were very clearly willing to stand and throw and have a striking match, while everyone else was really kind of amateur style grappling. I mean, even Alani and Thatcher, it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu versus kind of more catch wrestling. So I think that's why. And in past ambitions, especially when you had guys like Tommy End in here and other guys that are willing to do more striking, it did help mix up the format and mix up the samey feel. Whereas here, as I said, this was really a big grapple fest.
Yeah. Now, what matches stood out to you the most in Ambition?
Every Cobb match really stood out to me. And the biggest thing for the whole tournament was Thatcher, because it's the story of Thatcher through the tournament, from beginning to end. I mean, in the first round, there was something about Aulani. As I said, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, but he came across with the posture of someone who wanted to strike, but was afraid to go for it early on. Thatcher really kept advantage of him the whole way through, and eventually, once Aulani did go for a big head kick, Thatcher, you know, took that to set up his finish, as he was able to catch Aulani off guard after he threw a kick that didn't knock out Thatcher. He kind of went all in on that big kick and it didn't work. I loved that a lot. As I said, Cobb, Walter, I thought was a great match where it really showed off Cobb's power ability, suplexing, rampage bombing Walter. I talked to Cobb at PWG and I said, "God damn, that was super impressive." And Cobb's response was, "Walter's a big boy. My back hurt really bad after that one." So I was like, "I believe it," because that's a huge fucker to throw around like that. So definitely interesting. And then from there, you get into Walter and Cobb, or Thatcher and Cobb, in the semifinals. I think that this, again, the story is that Thatcher, with his catch wrestling prowess, Cobb not having the ability to really use any submissions, he puts pressure and he's able to ride Thatcher around on the mat, but Thatcher's always grabbing for arm locks, for leg locks, while Cobb really doesn't. And then finally at the end, Cobb is so frustrated at Thatcher because he's kind of like a Rubik's Cube that no one can figure out how to break in, because his submission defense is so strong, and his ground game is so tight, that finally Cobb gives up and tries to suplex him. And as he's suplexing, he leaves himself open to get caught with a Kimura. And I gave that match 3¾ star, and I made that prediction about Cobb having a 5-star match in this year. But I mean, for me, the Thatcher Cobb match here was about as close as it gets, I think, so far. I mean, I thought that was fucking amazing with the story that they told. Everything about it was just phenomenal. And then obviously the finals. I don't know what matches stood out for you, and then maybe we can both kind of get into the finals.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. The one thing I'd take away is it felt like a lot of it is samey. So it's hard to really, though it does fly by. That was only like, what, an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, the show?
It's like, it says an hour, 10 minutes, but if you cut out the Rico promo and kind of, you know, the opening segment where they show everybody on the stage, the thing is probably 45 minutes long.
Yeah, but they need to, so it flew by pretty quick. I mean, so it's an easy watch if you haven't checked it out. I think people should. But I could definitely see some people being turned off by this being kind of one-dimensional. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. And then, as I said, I mean, I think that they did a good job integrating the story, and with of Thatcher being really the story, which is kind of interesting because Riddle ends up being the one to go over, but it felt like Thatcher was the story. And then finally, after, as I said, the people who couldn't figure out a way to get Thatcher in any kind of submission or even really have much of an advantage with him on the mat. When it comes down to him and Riddle, it's Thatcher tries again, as he did to Aulani, to bring out the striking from Riddle by kind of smashing him on the mat. And once Riddle pops up and starts throwing these knees, it takes him out. I guess the biggest kind of takeaway, and the reason why for me the final match, I ended up at 4.5, and which is lower than the Cobb-Thatcher matches, because of the final knee being whiffed. I think the bicycle knee by Riddle that was supposed to be the knockout, kind of looking bad after Riddle had thrown such solid kind of Muay Thai clinch knees right before that for the kind of false finish knockout, really kind of took away from me. But all in all, I mean, I've said Ambition is kind of my WrestleMania of the year. It's kind of my big shows, usually, because I love the shoot style and I you know, the grappling and everything they do. And this solidly delivered. I'd say this is one of the best Ambition tournaments that I've seen in years.
Yeah, definitely. I can totally see your point of view, and I really enjoyed it. Again, I'd rather see, like, I think the style would get over, especially if you did a day. This is going to be Ambition style rules, or maybe make a championship, the Ambition style championship. I think it might make it a little interesting, as opposed to just doing that same style over and over again.
Yeah, which is like kind of what TNA tried to do with their, was it the Grand Champion thing? They were doing like a shoot style thing. And then when it does come into shoot style, it is, I don't know if you've watched the most recent Progress yet, but Callum Leslie, the commentator, is trying to kind of mention stuff that happened in WXW, and he mentions Ambition. And it's really awkward to in the context of another wrestling promotion, say, "Oh yeah, he did really well in this ambition tournament, and you can't, can you really say shoot style in the context of Progress? You know what I mean? Or in the context of a lot of wrestling companies, how do you really say shoot style without openly saying like, oh, well, the other kind of wrestling is phony and this is real.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So that's kind of the takeaways of the whole thing.
What was your favorite show of the three nights at Ambition?
Ambition probably was definitely my favorite.
Okay, I'm still going with night three as my favorite. I like a little bit more variety. Who was your MVP of Ambition?
MVP of Ambition probably has to be Thatcher. Maybe Cobb, but I would probably have to go with Thatcher.
Okay, I went with Riddle. So I thought this was great for him. And showed off his style and how he won it. But Thatcher was a stud. That Thatcher Riddle match was great, and I thought Thatcher Cobb was incredible too.
Yeah, and I mean, you could kind of shit on him for breaking character, but the big smile on his face a lot of times that was kind of breaking through, where you could just tell he was having the time of his life, was kind of really special. And as I said, he was the only guy that really had a story narrative throughout his matches.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And on that note, why don't we take a break and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and it opens up with Fox and Dirty Snooty Fox and Dirty Daddy versus him and Sis. What'd you think of this?
For the CWF, let me see the... This match, I think, really kind of flew by. I mean, there wasn't much to it.
2 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was some, you know... The match starts out okay, and then it breaks out into a wild brawl. And then, does this even... It gets DQ'd, doesn't it? There's not even a finish.
Yep.
So, I mean, I didn't really know... I hear other people say they can't understand the him and Sis characters. I kind of get the characters, but I don't understand the booking. It's one of the rare things on CWF where I just can't follow a narrative at all.
Okay, that's fair enough. I enjoyed it for what it was, which was a quick brawl. I think it was just to give us a little start the show and get us into that main event and you know, give us a separation, because you can't start the show at the... I think it was specifically booked do something quick, because they're going to give you some time in the main event, and they're pretty much... can't open the show with a Carney's interview or a Seidel party from the Doing Carnoto Brothers, you know?
Yeah, right, which is funny because, I mean, WWE refuses to start Raw with wrestling.
Right, I know.
CWF refuses to start their show with anything but wrestling.
Exactly. And then we get the CL party, and she does the Doing the Carnoto Brothers, plugging it, and we get this great Carney's promo, except who's the guy chewing the gum? Who was that guy?
It was Trip Cassidy, right?
Was it? Okay. I absolutely hated the fact that he's chewing gum in this promo. I thought it ruined the promo almost. Even though I thought Nick Higgy and the Carnies, I thought they were fantastic. The Trip Cassidy part with the chewing of the gum was like, are you kidding me? It was like, I don't know if he was doing it to be obnoxious or if he didn't realize it, but it really took a lot away from him. What do you think?
Yeah, it's one of the things that for me, because for me, I kind of was into Team IOU before the whole Carnies unit as a whole, and it does kind of feel like Trip Cassidy doesn't fit the same character or the same model. So he's kind of brash, cocky, punk rock heel, and they're playing the evil, kind of twisted, demented thing. So it does, as you said, it kind of takes away or kind of it messes with the structure of it, and then having him chew gum doesn't necessarily fit their whole aesthetic, but it just fits his character. So I get what you're saying there, but I thought the promo package was put together well. I thought Kerry Offal did a fantastic job, really coming across as just kind of creepy and sinister. Nick Higgy has really come into his own as the new kind of Carnival Barker character instead of playing the more of the Down South dandy thing, and kind of now he's the what do they call it, the master of ceremonies. So I'm starting to really like the way the ringmaster. I'm really starting to like the dynamics that they put together there.
I agree. I thought the promo was gold. I mean, it was creepy as hell, wasn't it?
Yeah. But as you said, the gum, I think, is the only...
The gum thing, yeah. It was actually... It distracted you from how good the promo was, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
And then we get this coming soon thing. Do you know who else is coming soon?
No, I don't know who it is. It's kind of an interesting thing. We'll see where it goes.
And then we get this main event. I love this match. We have Kane Justice versus Otto versus Chip Day versus Smith Garrett versus Andrews versus Lee. Oh, man. I thought the build was fantastic in the match. Trevor's submission work was really getting over. There's like a whole lot of stories going on, and you know how I like my umbrella storytelling. So this is just right up my alley. I dug Kane hiding from Trevor early in the match. And when he about to face him, he shoves him out so he doesn't have to really face him. We get to get a little taste. I like Stutzy planting the seeds of dissension between Kane and Trevor, how, you know, telling us the back history of how Kane had to go get more coaching because he didn't think he got enough from Trevor. So I kind of like that, and I really do hope we get a maybe eventually they team up and we kind of get the Larry Zbysko, Bruno Sammartino, a mentor student type of angle out of it, which one of the greatest angles of all time. I love Osiris costing Garrett as an elimination. You know, it was all about the story. It wasn't because Osiris didn't want to do a clean job or whatever. It served the story. And it made perfect sense and stuff. And, like, you know, later on we'll talk about Wrestle Circus. And one of my big problems was a lot of the finishes. I don't think they were serving the story. I think it was more about protecting egos or trying to compromise. But here, just that was all about the story. I was having a blast watching Kane go after Trevor's leg. Chip Day was a complete buzzsaw in here. Loved the Day Lee interaction, and I loved the double team of getting Otto Swantz out. I loved it. Loved Andrews picking his spots. It was so character driven and made so perfect sense of who he is and what's he about. So I totally loved this. So I mean, there's a lot of character building going on here, and it makes it so hard, but they just did it, and so seamlessly. I love the great strike exchange between Lee and Chip Day. It was incredible, and I love the how Kane getting the cover of Day. I thought was fantastic. That knee strike of Trevor's is freaking incredible. And then we get a Great promo by Lee. Attitude is out. And the post-match angle just fucking ruled. Just absolutely ruled. I gave this 4 stars. I thought it was an excellent match. It really showcased all these guys, and it made the promotion seem so light years ahead of everybody else when it comes to booking and announcing and the talent. It was just so smartly worked. What would you think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think CWF does a really impressive job of putting together these long narrative matches, especially ones with multiple guys. The wrestling doesn't ever feel like a backseat, even though this is more storytelling than match. I mean, they don't give any matches away. And this is, I mean, you know, a lot of Japanese companies, they throw together big multiple man tag matches that just feel like an afterthought, but it's all about protecting big singles matches. Well, right here, I mean, they're protecting big singles matches. They're teasing them, but they're having a match where the wrestling still feels super important and still super compelling. Just amazingly impressive. Chip kind of sets up Smith Garrett to take a blind tag in as he's holding an arm wringer on Trevor. And I noticed that Garrett kind of refuses to take the kind of heelish tag team route. And then Chip gives the clean break. And I was just like, oh, is Chip a heel here? Is he a face? It's hard to tell. You know, he's the James Dean of wrestling, they say. So it's the dynamic there is really interesting, as you have Chip as kind of a tweener. You have all three singles champions, and then you only really have two baby faces who are clear-cut baby faces with Trevor and Garrett. And then you get Garrett out of there because of, as you said, the Ex-Cyrus kind of distraction. Love Otto cutting off the dive train. That's such great heel work from the big man. Cuts off the fun and starts kind of working him over. Kane, you know, from the entrances, Kane comes out. He's totally different than normal. He's not cocky. He's not into being out here. So I kind of love that. And then he's got this real kind of, you know, young boy syndrome where we've seen Kane having these matches with other guys. He's cocky, confident. He can take just as much as he can dish out. But he, for some reason, when it's Trevor, he just can't take it because that's his trainer. You know, when Trevor starts, when Trevor's kind of bowing up on him and looks like he's going to throw hands or throw strikes, it really scares Kane because he can remember when he was a young boy that Trevor was the first guy that gave it to him, and it always hurts worse when you're just starting out, you know? But now he's tough. Now he probably could stand up to Trevor, but he doesn't quite get there. And then you finally see a flip kind of switch in Kane's head, and he goes at the eyes, and then he starts taking it to Trevor, and the leg work. I almost kind of got upset thinking that Trevor no-selled the legwork on first viewing. On second viewing, I realized Kane's legwork was super short, so realistically it didn't denote long-term selling of the leg, but it just looked so good that the first time I watched it, I was kind of hoping Trevor would keep selling it for the rest of the match. The strike-off between Tripp and Trevor is fantastic. I love that they're showing off these flashy kicks back and forth, boom, boom, boom. And then finally, they knock the shit out of each other so much that all they can do is just stand there and throw big forearms. Kane, as you said, Kane's stealing the pin perfect. Eric Andrews, you know, using trickery and bullshit, but he just can't put away Trevor. He eventually gets caught and submits. And Trevor, I mean, Trevor went the whole way. He's the marathon man. I don't think Trevor ever once tagged out of the match. He had to get thrown out of the ring. He wanted to be there as much as he could to prove that he was the top dog. He even would have eliminated Chip, but it got stolen from him. So he set up the Chip versus Trevor rematch at the next show, which I think is going to be fantastic based on what we saw here. And I am right there with you. I gave it 4 stars, and the post-match angle was fantastic as well.
I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we all agreed. How many stars did you give it?
4 stars as well.
Yeah, just epic, epic, great storytelling. And most promotions just can't do this type of wrestling. And it's because it all goes down to their booking. You know, everything they do makes sense, so they're able to roll out a story-driven match, and you know, I think this is a more of a payoff to the loyal followers of the promotion.
Oh yeah, no, exactly.
Well, that was CWF Mid-Atlantic, another thumbs up show for me. Loving me some Kane Justice, Otto, I thought looked good. Chip Day, I thought looked great. Smith Garrett played his role to perfection. Andrews and Lee, I mean, all over the place. This is just good stuff. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. All right. Oh, man. All right, man. Why don't we move over to a Ring of Honor? And, you know, it's so hard to get excited about this television.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like we're on a sinking ship. It's like a chore to get through. Even the matches aren't even that exciting anymore. Nothing. I mean, there's not a match out there that I'm dying to see that they can put on. I find it insane that people are going to their show WrestleMania weekend when there's so many other shows available. And not only that, but you actually have to kick it so far away, you got to get on a bus to go there. It baffles my mind.
Yeah, and I mean, last year's WrestleMania shows from them had a couple good matches, but I mean, that was, I mean, for me, the standout of their last weekend was, you know, Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, they're gone. Other people stand out was Jay Lethal and Leo Rush, and, you know, Leo Rush is gone. So I mean, realistically, yeah, what are you going for? If you're going to the ROH show WrestleMania weekend, if you're listening to this and you're going to the ROH WrestleMania weekend shows, tell me what you're going for. I'd actually like to know.
Yeah, I need to ask one of our traveling partners is going, so I should ask him. No idea. I know a lot of people wanted to see the Bucks versus the Hardys, but I mean, we've already seen it now in some form. The fact that you got to go. You know, I can understand I understand being a Ring of Honor fan and checking it out, but to me, I think the biggest drawback is how far away it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much wrestling that weekend, and it's all a lot of the companies are running in the same buildings, or at least right next to each other, and it's like, why are you going to go out of your way for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, do you know how far away it is?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that it's pretty damn far from what I heard. It's like a lot of the other places are. You know, 5-10 minute ride, maybe.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and this one's something close to that from what I've heard.
That's just nuts. Absolutely nuts. All right. We open up with Silas Young and the Beer City Bruiser versus Cheeseburger and Will Ferrara. You know, it's like we've seen this match like I think 8 billion times in some form or fashion. They're teasing a third member who they've scoured long and hard for. You have any clue in hell the third member is?
I have a clue that I know it doesn't fucking matter because TK O'Ryan got injured, so they already announced that it's just a regular tag team match.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter.
So this angle, it's another angle that's on TV that's completely moot because I already know in real time that it doesn't end up leading to anything.
Yep, exactly. What do you think of the match?
The match itself, I mean, solid heel babyface work. After coming off of some seeing other matches here and there where you can never pick out who's the heel and who's the face. I do like that they did a good job with that, at least here. Will tries to lift the Beer City Bruiser, but he can't do it. Gets cut off and they lose. That's it. I mean, who could care? And they had Berger was one of the hottest guys in wrestling, man. I mean, sure, some could say it was the ironic fandom, but people actually cared about him, and now I don't think anyone cares about any of these guys.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. Then we got a top prospect match. Josh Woods versus Kalisto Ligurusso. Woods looks like a money guy, money player, right?
Woods has potential, but for me, Ligurusso looked more polished right now. But
Without a doubt.
But I think you're right that I think you could get more out of Woods in the long run.
Ligurusso looks kind of like I think he looks like mid-card to me. I mean, do you disagree, or...
Yeah, I mean, Ligurusso looks like he could be their knockoff Dalton Castle when he eventually leaves.
The replacement Dalton Castle. Oh, God. What'd you think of the match? Good. Lord help us.
The match was fine. I mean, the action was good. There's some awkwardness here and there, but really basic stuff. They never really turned it up and started showing anything too crazy off. I think obviously Woods is probably pretty green. I like the fire from Woods. He can't be kept down. I liked the pup handle DVD from Ligurusso. I thought that was solid. And as I said, good back and forth. Really basic, realistic looking wrestling. Nothing too crazy. And Ligurusso looked good wearing down Woods. And as I said, Woods looked good firing back up and fighting from underneath.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. Then we get Jay Briscoe promo, and, you know, yeah, as good as he is, even he's stale as hell, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he needs something to talk about. You can't just give... I mean, in some ways, you kind of probably could just give Jay Briscoe a camera and let him talk about whatever the fuck he wants, and it'd at least be entertaining, but it's not going to really build your wrestling show if he doesn't have something new and fresh to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Then we get Kenny King versus Lio Rush. I guess Kenny King is going to be on The Bachelorette, so he'll be gone for a while, I'm assuming. Or, I mean, it's again, who cares? Obviously, Lio Rush is on his way out, and he's on job patrol. I thought they had an okay match, but again, I didn't care. And then it debuted with Shane Taylor as part of the Kenny King group. What do you think?
Yeah, we're gonna have back to back Shane Taylor kind of used weirdly with this and Wrestle Circus, which is just God. Two super supremely talented guys. I didn't even realize that Kenny King was on The Bachelor or going to be on The Bachelorette or whatever. Because it's funny because
It's the first African American Bachelorette.
Yeah, that's what
I guess it's a big deal in that sense.
That's what I was going to say. And the only reason why I know is because I listened to my brother and me, the McElroy podcasts, and they do one about The Bachelorette. And I guess it was the first black bachelorette or bachelor contestant who made it to the final two or final three. And then now she's going to be her own bachelorette. And so they pick out Kenny King. I'm just like, really? Of all the people, the stripper wrestler is going to be one of the guys, but whatever. Yeah. We'll see how he goes. The thing about those shows is it's about having personality, and that's Kenny King's like biggest missing thing. So I don't necessarily know if he's going to woo this girl with his capoeira kick or something. But
yeah, but you know, when you think about it, he still has a lot more personality than average Joe Blow, you know?
That's true. And the thing about a male stripper is that it's not necessarily about how you look or how you dance, but it's about exuding a sexiness and charisma that chicks and gay guys buy into. So he can definitely do that. But the match itself, as I said, two supremely talented workers, but this is another, it's an ROH, it's not even just an ROH, but it's also, as I said, with the first match where it's nice where you have the clear-cut heel babyface dynamic. It's the Lio Rush problem that we're now seeing, I think, everywhere. I can't care about this match because I don't have any emotional investment at all. So this match just bores me, even if they're both super talented.
Fair enough. And then we get Jay Briscoe versus Jay White. I thought this was a really good match. I gave it like 3.5 stars. I thought both guys worked their asses off. They both busted out dives. But you know what? I was a little surprised that that Jay Briscoe didn't win with his finisher. And it was just a lariat. I was real surprised about that. I thought they'd make a big deal about him going down to the J-Driller. And instead he just loses to a lariat. I got a question. I mean, if you're the whole entire point is to try to put him on Jay Briscoe's level, at least let Briscoe beat him with his finisher, not just a random clothesline. What you make of it?
Yeah, they seem to be trying to push because they had Jay win a couple matches in the Decade of Excellence with the lariat, didn't they? Or at least one that I remember.
Yeah.
So they might be pushing his lariat, but either way, I totally agree with you. I think I'm right there with you. I think I had probably 3.25, 3.5, just like you. I mean, I like that they're putting over the time limit draw or whatever that they had last time. Jay White's taking Jay Briscoe to the limit again here. Love the table spot. I think Jay Briscoe does a really good job of always putting those random table spots into his match like that, where it comes out of nowhere. It's a perfect spot for a huge tide change, and it really does kind of amp up the violence of the match as it is. I like, again, Jay White, I think, is really fucking good fighting underneath Fiery Babyface. But, again, no matter how much kind of they get him going, he still feels squandered. And then this is it right here. I mean, I think he's leaving, but at the same time, it feels odd to me to... I don't think it helps Briscoe in any way to beat Jay White. I don't think he was built up to that level. And I think all it does is really kind of neuter Jay White. It doesn't help Briscoe in any way. So I don't see the point of this at all, even having the match, let alone feeling the need to make Briscoe win.
Yeah, and that's the other problem, is they don't have any heels that people really care about or that are portrayed as heelish. And so, having a babyface match, I mean, that doesn't help White at all. It doesn't really help Briscoe at all. I mean, a match that was booked that didn't help either guy.
Yeah, it does nothing for either of them. And realistically, as I said, you don't need to worry about Jay White because he's leaving or going back to New Japan. But you could have done, like, what was the point for Briscoe? You just had Briscoe have this really kind of hard-fought victory, and I don't think that it really does anything for his aura, because I think Briscoe is realistically at the level that he's at no matter what.
Yep, you're absolutely right. There's nothing they can do anymore. And that was a pretty by-the-numbers Ring of Honor. What do you think?
Yeah, and they're still in the post-pay-per-view haze. And I mean, I heard someone talking about the WrestleMania show saying, oh, they just had a really good pay-per-view, so I hope that some of that transfers over to the Supercard of Honor, the WrestleMania weekend shows. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but the problem is we have so much TV that just doesn't. It doesn't matter what they do when half of their product, their weekly product that a lot of people see more regularly than the pay-per-views, just feels stale and old and out of sync.
Yeah, it's just not clicking right now. They're not on a... They're definitely not on a creative upswing at all, and they're losing talent left and right. It's just a bad... It's like they're on the Titanic, and they don't know how to freaking... they don't know how to right the ship right now. They're in trouble.
Yeah, no, and the thing is, I don't think that they're really in trouble monetarily. I think they're doing fine that, but creatively, I mean, God.
Yeah, creatively, it's a doldrum.
Yeah, it's just a nightmare.
Very doldrum. All right, man. What's we move off from there and we'll look at NXT. And I thought we opened up with an Orny Lorcan versus Cien Almas match that I liked a lot. I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought Lorcan's offense was so smash mouth. I thought at first the crowd didn't really get it, but then eventually the crowd really gets into this match through the hard work, which I really like. And it ended up being a strong match, even though the angle building this match, I thought was stupid. As Cien Almas bully, that Orny Lorcan's got to defend, who was it?
Ho-Ho Loon.
Yeah, Ho-Ho Loon. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Ho-Ho Loon looks like a guy who would get bullied. But it's just, I thought, I mean, you're a wrestler. Do you really, an angle where you get bullied and you need somebody to save you? I mean, why don't you just chop Ho-Ho Loon's legs out from under him to be forever? I mean, just terrible. I thought the angle sucked. What about you?
I'm right there with you. I think I have less vitriol for the angle, and I liked the match even more than you. And I've kind of been on my screed saying that I feel like this is a fucking waste. I mean, Almas is going to the takeover special, essentially probably to job to Aleister Black. And so you're using Oney as the setup guy for Almas. And meanwhile, I think that they had what would probably have been the best match on TakeOver here on this TV. I mean, God, I think that this would easily be better than the main event that they're going to have at TakeOver with Nakamura and Rude. It definitely felt PWG-esque, but the crowd fucking loved it. They're super into it. There's big, nasty strikes, as you said, from Biff that just look... Or Orny Lorcan that look great. The European uppercut to the back of the neck that he threw in here just looked like it'd fucking kill somebody. I mean, yeah, and then you have the story. Orny Lorcan is a scrapper, and he's just going to scrap no matter what. I mean, he goes to the floors. He goes for dives every time, gets cut off 2-3 times, and then finally, I mean, after getting cut off, going for dives and all this, he finally goes all the way up the top rope with a big just flip dive to the floor, and finally he hits something, and you just kind of start to really love the guy because it's like, you want to cheer him on for being, I mean, he might be dumb, but at least he, like, keeps coming. Like, you know what I mean? In some ways, it's just kind of admirable in that regard. He gets fired up, and he's doing these charging attacks into the corner that are, like, they're not European uppercuts, they're not lariats. He's just kind of throwing his body at the guy. And, I mean, it's just fantastic stuff. And then Almas kind of turns up the ruthlessness at the end as he's finally just completely pissed off, having been taken, I mean, to his limit. And he just shotgun knees right to the face. Big, he hits the Sombra, the Hammerlock DDT, gets the pin. And as I said, I think that this would have easily been the best match on TakeOver. Solid stuff. Both guys just phenomenal athletes. And it just sucks that this is on TV to set up the debut of Aleister Black. Meanwhile, you know, Orny Lorcan's not going to be on the show.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm really liking Cien Almas as the heel here. But I don't like. I don't like Lorcan being as the setup fodder guy. I think Lorcan. I mean, I think Lorcan and Aleister Black would actually have a good feud.
Yeah, no, I think I've actually seen them wrestle each other, and it's good. I mean, fantastic stuff out of those two.
Yeah, I actually think that'd be a better match than what we're gonna get with CN. And I think CN Almas has been pretty good as a heel.
Yeah, I think he's really stepping it up. And yeah, I mean, this is. this match should have been on TakeOver. That's it. That's my final thing. And you should have Aleister Black beating literally anyone else, because you have plenty of guys under contract who haven't even been on TV yet. Just throw him like a real jobber. You don't need to waste these two guys who actually have some potential.
I agree. Totally agreed. And then it seems like Cena Almas has just been on this, like, losing, like, he's been buried lately, and I don't know if he's going to be buried, but he now seems like he's, I understand when he's a babyface, because he was a shitty babyface, but he's a good heel, but now they still feel like they're punishing him.
Yeah, which is so dumb. It's like, if you're going to do that, you should have kept him babyface. Yeah. Why switch him heel just to continue to job him out?
Yeah, exactly. Once you become heel, he should be fresh, and he should be winning a little more. And yeah, he is, but this has just been a weird feud overall. Totally, you know? It started off in the Japan show, and where Lorcan got the surprise win. Then Cena almost got the win back. And then they run the bully angle, which I thought was just terrible. They're having some problems, I think, in creative and in NXT a little bit too, where it feels like nothing seems fresh.
Yeah, similar issues. I can definitely see that.
Yeah. And then we got the DIY interview, and it was like, it was what it was. What do you make of it?
Yeah, not fantastic. Really doesn't get me going too much, but it's also not, it wasn't bad, but it just didn't come across the way that people talk. If that makes sense. It came across the way WWE superstars talk.
Yep. That makes perfect sense. And then we get Asuka squash. But what they're doing is they're really pushing the Eclipse hard. Because I think they need to put a chink in Asuka's armor. Because they've almost made Asuka unbeatable into the super duper force. And so now no one... It's kind of like back in the 90s... people thought that Cactus Jack never could get hurt because he could, you know, he'd get his ear ripped off, he'd go through tables, but he could hurt. And I think right now they're showing that Asuka can get hurt too. They've made her almost like this, put her on a pedestal that's too high. What you make of this?
The squash itself was almost nothing. I agree with you in some ways. I hope that's the problem, is that I hope that they don't just have Ember Moon beat her. You know, but that feels like where they're going. And then it doesn't feel like it was built too properly. As you said, it'd be better off to slowly erode and show the chinks in the armor rather than just go straight to the big loss. But it also kind of feels like that might be their plan, as they might be planning on moving Asuka up, especially because they have some new girls coming in. And in NXT, I mean, things may have changed somewhat, but NXT has always been kind of one in, one out. So I don't know that they're necessarily going to want to have a bunch of Japanese girls all in NXT at the same time.
Yeah, good point. That's a very good point. And then we get a revival promo, and usually they're a lot more together on the promo. Here they felt like they were running over each other, but it was still a good promo. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, it feels like the thing is that Dawson used to do all the talking, and now Dash is getting in there a little bit more, and he's just, I mean, it's good because he needs to up his promo game as well. But it is going to be a little bit like they're kind of re-getting their timing and re-putting together how it works. It's kind of a comparison would be kind of Roman Reigns and The Shield. It was like he used to come in with the pithy. He just hit the last line and come out strong. But then when he had to start carrying his own promos, he's a duck out of water. So it's better to have him get those reps in now while he still can be protected by having Dawson there to kind of carry the legwork, but kind of start expanding himself a little bit more as they go. So hopefully they continue to improve.
Yep. And then we get a Rude and Nakamura package. And you know what? This match feud kind of petered out to me. What about you?
Yeah, it was never something that was super exciting to me. And I think it's just becoming more and more. This video felt like overkill. It was just too long. It would be one thing if you do this kind of video package for a match that really over-delivered the first time that they had it, but it didn't. So it feels like too much. I mean, you can do this for, I don't know, Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels because, it's an epic match, but you can't do it for Nakamura versus Rude because it's like, I remember that match was okay.
Yeah, it was good. And, I mean, it was like, I thought it was like a 3.5, 3.75. But you know what? I mean, that's like thousands of matches this year.
Exactly.
And then we get Strong and No Way Jose and a Dillinger, and they do a promo. On paper, I really like this team, where you have Strong, who can carry a lot of the workload. You have Dillinger, who's incredibly over, and No Way Jose, who the crowd loves. So on paper, I really like what these guys do. Well, what you make of the promo, and what do you think of these guys as a team?
Yeah, I think that they're pretty good. I think Ty is kind of the opening guy, as his technical proficiency is good. You have Strong, who works more of the kind of flashy grounding down parts of matches, and then Jose, who can bat clean up with the big hot finishes, and that is a pretty great team in that regard. I thought the promo was solid, punny. I like that they did puns on their names and the situation with Sanity and all that. I'm into it. So it worked, and they came across as a uniformed force going forward.
Yep. Heavy machinery vignette. I mean, just to me, that's just the gimmick seems shitty. What do you make of it?
To me, the gimmick seems okay, but the name is kind of dumb, so I guess I get it. But the gimmick of two big bruisers tag teams is, I mean, it's obviously something I've always loved. I like the big kind of hossy tag teams, but I get, yeah, the heavy machinery name and then kind of playing off of tractors and trucks and stuff is kind of
weird.
Yeah,
it's just dumb. It's like 1990s bad.
Yeah, they come across like toddlers playing in the sandbox.
Yeah, it's just I'm not liking it. We'll see. Then we get a Cassius Ohno promo, and the Drifter interrupts and sets up a loser leaves NXT bout.
Which will be the second one for the Drifter, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I think he already lost a loser leaves town match before, so maybe that's his gimmick. It'll be that the Drifter, because he's a Drifter, he's supposed to kind of drift all around and not have a like a home anywhere, but he keeps losing loser leaves town matches, but then just never fucking leaves. That'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like Ohno got rude, and then he has to go fall all the way down the ladder to face the Drifter. It felt like, almost feels like punishment for not having a classic match.
It's an interesting paradigm, right, to say he comes in with such a record from outside of here that he gets an instant title shot, but because he doesn't deliver, now he has to start at the bottom rung just like everybody else.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird in that regard.
And then we get Cena Almas and Aleister Black, sets up that match. We already talked about that. What do you think of the six-man match?
I thought that the six-man match looked good. It was Alexander Wolf finally got a chance to shine here and show off what he can do. I feel like he's really been an afterthought in NXT this whole time, and he's actually a really good worker. He's a guy who started out in WXW, as we were talking about earlier. And
yeah, I thought he had a really good match in 16 Karat last year. I can't remember against who off the top of my head, but I thought it was like a 4.5-star match.
It may have not been last year. It may have been the year before.
It was the year before. It was leaving for NXT.
Yeah, it was right before he left. But no, totally. I mean, the guy was really solid worker. And just kind of disappeared in NXT and has been the afterthought guy of the group. But here he looked good again. And I thought that this was nice. And you play up Sanity's numbers game as Nikki Cross gets involved. And then Heidi Lovelace shows up, which is exciting. I'm a Heidi Lovelace fan.
Yeah, I love the angle. Hate her name, Ruby Riott. Is that what she's going by?
That's what I've heard. And they didn't. I don't know if they said it here, but I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the name. I get the concept, but I'm not a big fan, really.
And I don't know if the crowd really responded to her. They responded to her, but I think they're expecting it to be a little bigger of a reaction.
Yeah, and it's tough because she wasn't necessarily a mainstream big name.
Yeah.
I think she's a girl that a lot of us would know.
Yeah.
But not everybody in the crowd there would know.
I think they're putting over a new sale as being full of hardcores, and they have a lot of hardcore fans in there. But they're not as smart as they think they are. You know, the crowd, I think the company's giving them too much credit. Because I think they, you know, when they saw Kevin Owens and the Samoa Joe reactions, I think they thought they were smart because they knew who they were. And they thought that would translate to other people. And it's really not, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And overall, that was a good show in the end. I liked how it ended it. And they're building to the show. I'm kind of glad I don't have tickets to this one. And really, on paper, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the love here.
Yeah, I'm not as obviously I'm not super excited about this takeover. Especially, I mean, it's kind of an indictment, I guess some could say, that I think that, you know, Biff or Orny Larkin versus Almas would have been like the best match on the show. So that's just showing where I'm at. I don't think that there's going to be anything on the show that's going to be better than that match. So realistically, I'm not super excited for it.
Well, there you go. And then well, why don't we take a break here, and we'll be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And this is Wrestle Circus, South by Southwest. Legitimately, I was there live. Papa Hales was there. Dylan Hales was there. Jeremy Schneider was traveling. Some of the big wig travelers were there. If I had to guess, I'd say there's probably between 1,000 or 1,500 people. I don't think they generated any money because they had it at a place called Emo's, which is it's like a concert venue. Like my ticket was free because if you bought your tickets to the last two shows, you got a free one. So I'm assuming most of it was papered. Would you make that guess?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I mean this is taking the spot of those Lucha Underground shows from last year that weren't they free because they were sold from South by Southwest, weren't they? They were like part of the thing.
Yeah.
So this is probably a similar deal.
Yeah, and then if you had badges, you got in and all that stuff.
Yeah, so
I felt the Lucha Underground outdrew it last year compared to this one.
Right, but I'm pretty sure that Wrestle Circus was getting their money no matter how many people showed up or not, because South by Southwest was paying them.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's what I would assume. If you get in with your South by Southwest ticket, then I would assume you're getting paid based on they're getting a flat fee rather than how many people show up.
Okay. Let's talk about the first off, I want to say I feel, and this is not an indictment towards Wrestle Circus. I think this is an indictment towards a lot of indie shows. I think Progress does it better than anybody. When you have a hot crowd, fuck, don't put the damn don't have the announcers drown out your crowd.
Yeah,
it drives me freaking batty. They had it. I thought they had the mix fine for the first like 2 minutes of the show or 3 minutes of the show. Then they tweaked it and they had the announcers drowning out the crowd. So far in all their releases so far, the crowd doesn't even come across super hot. I've been in all these crowds. They've been super hot. And it's because of the way they're miking their announcers by putting their volume above the crowd. And it kind of takes away from the excitement of the show. Did you feel like, and it's not just a Wrestle Circus problem.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that Progress has almost the opposite issue, where sometimes you can't hear the commentators very well because of how low mic they are compared to the crowd. Not necessarily a bad thing, as you're saying. It's kind of nice sometimes to be able to hear what the crowd is doing. And it's been such an issue, I mean, that it has, how do I put this? It's been an issue, obviously, because you're saying the crowds are hot. And for me, on all of these Wrestle Circus shows, it's felt like the crowd was a non-factor. So that's definitely an issue then, because to me, I haven't even noticed the crowds there at all. And you're saying
except
that they're
the
super
ones,
hot crowds.
You've seen them, though, some of them without the commentary, and they've come across loud.
Yeah, the fan cams for Sammy Guevara matches have sounded great. But since they've been doing them with the commentary, it feels like the crowd... So I thought that the crowd here was just bad because it was probably casuals who didn't care about wrestling.
Part of it was, but it was still a pretty hot crowd. It wasn't as hot as, and it was a different venue too. It was still a pretty hot crowd, I thought, but not nearly as hot as where we had been at 800 Congress. And there was a lot of casuals. I mean, the match that got over the most was actually the Jervis Cottonbell and Joey Ryan match. And that tells you there was a lot of casuals there because that was a match that, It was built on comedy, and they did a good job with it, with the comedy. But it was by far not the best match on the show, and they need to get the crowd mic'd properly, because they're telling everybody how hot the crowds are. The wrestlers are saying how hot the crowds are. We come across as not a hot crowd on TV.
Yeah, no, that's how it's been feeling on tape.
Kevin Gill, terrible.
One of the worst.
Absolutely terrible announcer.
Yeah, the 2017 Worst Commentator Award for Juan Hoff is going to be one of the hardest, most contentious battles. Because some of these commentators are really turning it up when you got guys like Kevin Gill coming in. I mean, the guy is just fucking atrocious.
Why would you even have him? I don't understand why you would use this guy.
He's got connections. He's got some connections, I guess, but I don't know what he's bringing to the table, honestly. I don't know him personally. I don't know what he does behind the scenes, but he's got to have some kind of connections or something, because people use this guy, and he's just really fucking bad.
Yeah, he's terrible. Absolutely terrible. He didn't know, like, some of the names of the finishers, didn't know some of the backstories. It was like, he was totally unprepared. Now, I liked Lance Archer.
Yeah, me too.
I think he'd even be better if he had a real play-by-play guy leading him, you know, actually setting him up for stuff. I thought Lance carried this broadcast, and I thought he was funny. I thought he was entertaining, and you know what? I think he'd be really insightful if we had like a Brad Stutz or Emil J calling the match.
Well, you need the Brad Stutz or the Emil J of Texas. That's the thing. And
yeah.
I mean, Texas doesn't have that guy who knows the history of Texas wrestling really well that can fill in and help him out. Because you got Archer, who is a wrestler in the Texas area, so he knows. But he needs a play-by-play guy who knows the Texas history better to set him up. I mean, the only thing that Kevin Gill set up Lance Archer for on this was for him to make a bad joke about the fucking Page videos leaking. You know, I mean, that was the only thing that Kevin Gill ever really set up here.
Yep. Gil's just terrible again. Anything else about the presentation?
The people, the drunken people dancing next to the alleyway. Do you have any insight? I've heard rumors that they were plants. I don't believe it.
I don't think they're plants because they had wrestling shirts on.
I think that they were given drink tickets, maybe to act extra excited or something. But the dancing was a little weird, I'll say.
I will agree. I felt like they were told to behave that way. Like they were. I think they got instructed to do that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think that they were probably grabbed. They were probably told, "Here, we'll give you some free drinks if you guys make sure to amp up the excitement." And maybe someone who doesn't understand wrestling, maybe someone who's involved with South by Southwest and not necessarily Wrestle Circus, said, yeah, why don't you dance? People like dancing.
Because
it was very weird. It was just very, very weird.
I agreed there. Let's talk about the booking of the show.
Oof.
I thought it was the booking of the finishes was some of the worst, and they actually hurt some of the matches.
Yep.
Not hurt some, but hurt most of the matches. I mean, let's look here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 had a fuck finish, had some form of finish, either be a low blow, outside interference, powder to the face, I mean, that's just terrible, a percentage. So that's horrible.
Yes.
Secondly, if you're going to bring Leva Bates in to do some cosplay, you better have clean finishes up and down the damn card if you're going to have her interfere in your semi-main event.
Yep.
It's one thing to have her interfere in Joey Ryan matches, or in comedy matches. Not in your semi-main event.
It's almost... Okay, we did PWX a while back, and they did Callahan versus Jeff Hardy as the main event of a show that already was kind of weak.
Yeah.
And that was almost a better use of a Hardy brother as a special attraction.
Yeah.
And that was fucking terrible. This was atrocious. If you wanted to do this match as your attraction, it really should have been in the middle of the card.
Yeah. It was it was a bad match on top of it. I mean,
yeah.
Besides the fuck, I mean, that finish. I mean, the having the cosplay Jeff Hardy thing. It I mean, everyone saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah.
It just, God, it left a real bad taste in my mouth. Let's see where else I'm at. The booking.
Over and over again.
Yeah, I was there live. And I mean, I'm not a snarky guy. There was a lot of snarky fans there. Like, there was some kid behind me. I just wanted to slap the taste out of his mouth. He's going boring during a Matthew Riddle match. Okay. There's no such thing as a boring Matt Riddle match, is there?
Especially not against Brian Cage.
Yeah.
Jesus. That was
I'm hearing the boring when they're rolling on the mat. The guy was chanting to Aaron's, calling Aaron Solo Mr. Bailey or Bailey's husband. Yeah, that's real original. Most fans don't go there because they realize how stupid it is and how kind of disrespectful it is to them. And so I've never actually heard that chant to them, Matt. I've never heard anyone really start it. And here this kid was just horrible. So there's a lot of that. There's the drunk guy who they're teasing. I don't like the whole Reddit thing.
Yeah.
You've already made the Sideshow. I mean, yeah, okay, it's the Sideshow Champion. It's already a ridiculous name. But at least he sticks with the theme. But they've already, in six shows, have now cheapened the belt to beyond nothingness, you know?
And I mean, I get the idea. I get what they're trying to do. And, you know,
Get buzz. I mean, I get it.
And I'll just say this. If you are, like, one of these weird Chikara-ites and you don't want anything, like, exposed, and I won't even completely expose it, then, like, skip over for a bit here, a couple seconds, but, like, okay, Jervis Cottonbelly is involved in the Squared Circle subreddit behind the scenes, or at least was at one point. And that's why he's the guy who probably came up with this concept, put the whole thing together, and wanted to do it. I totally understand that. But, like, it was asking for trouble when he says, I want one of you to jump in the ring. And some guy fucking went for it and went and dove in. But, I mean, I don't know where you were going with the joking crowd.
Yeah, and we're lucky because, you know what, Scorpio Sky is a legit tough person and could have really hurt that guy.
Yeah, he was very lucky that Scorpio Sky was super composed. And I'd actually give a lot of credit to Scorpio because not only was he super composed, he caught it. And he turned it into the storyline by then making it into a heel thing, saying, I'm not wrestling some random fan. I'm going to wrestle a wrestler because I'm a professional. Yeah. And I was like, thank God, because you're so right. If this had been even just a few years ago when wrestling was treated like it mattered, Scorpio Sky would have just started putting the boots to that fucking guy. And it wouldn't have been his fault because they asked someone to come in the ring.
Yeah, they did. Exactly.
God damn.
Okay, on top of that, I don't know about you, on Twitter, this thing got praised really well you think people are just blinded by the promotion right now?
I didn't see that, but this is what happened. I tried to watch it live. It was skipping and jumping. I couldn't tell what the fuck was going on.
I follow a lot of people from WrestleGirls Twitter because I go to the show, so it's just something, so maybe that's why it's on my timeline. Well, and maybe it's because these guys are there and they're just so fanboyed up to it. I mean, I'm just floored.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thing, and it's, I mean, I get a similar feeling with PWG now, especially with Meltzer going, and then having to see the Observer reports of matches that Meltzer and me saw live, and he's giving them 18 stars.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was fine at best. It was good, but, you know, and it's a similar thing totally where you're seeing it on Twitter, where these people who are super excited about the promotion, but like I said, the reason why I probably didn't follow it is because I tried to watch it live. It was fucking up so much that I just gave up, and that's why I just stopped following it on Twitter. So I didn't see any of the reactions saying that it was really good.
Okay, and most of my tweets didn't get retweeted by anybody from the Wrestle Circus community because I was shitting on it on my live feed on the booking. And only I had a couple people asking about it, but for the most part, I'm seeing people just praise it on my timeline. And I'm like, I thought this by far there was their worst show they've done. They've done a lot of good shows. I mean, their booking hasn't been great to begin with, but here it really got really bad. I mean, this booking was about as bad as a booked show as I could possibly even think of. I mean, I know they like to use the garbage man, and I actually like George Gaddon as a character. I like the garbage man as a character, but it seemed like they have no idea what the fuck they're doing with him. First, he was EC3's lackey. Then he interfered in the Elgin cage match, okay, that's fine. But now he interfered in this six-man tag. I don't even understand why he was interfering in that. To set up a match with Jordan Lennox. Why you go from there interfering on here and then you're interfering here? It made no sense. I know what made why. It's because they're setting up a program with him and Jordan Lennox. Okay, then why did he interfere in an Elgin Cobb match or Elgin cage match a couple shows ago? It's got to be consistent. It's you just don't do it just for doing it. It's got, like I said earlier on our CWF part of the show, it's got to serve the story. Here, it's not serving the story. It's serving your fucking amusement.
Yeah, I don't know who the guy is. He must be somebody. He must be somebody's friend or something. But, I mean, and that was... That match... And I could almost accept it if it was just that match was going to be the one kind of shit show. And so you throw everything in it. I mean, the booking and stuff on that match was already fucking atrocious to me. And then you threw that...
You fly the fucking boys in to do that. You could have fucking had them at least... You know what? Why waste the money? Why don't you just fucking book two local guys if they're going to have Shane Taylor run them off?
And why did he wait until the middle of the match? Yeah. If Shane Taylor's going to do that, do it from the start. Here's an idea. Film a stupid vignette. We're at an ROH show where they both were already there getting paid, probably at ROH TV. Have Shane Taylor pretend that he beat up the boys, film them passed out in the locker room, and then be like, oh, I fucked them up before the show. I'm taking their spot, and just play that on the fucking feed or something. So Shane Taylor just takes their spot to begin with. He comes out in the middle. He beats them. I mean, it was already. But here's what I was saying is, if this was going to be the one fuck finish bullshit match, then I could almost accept that you added in the trash man on top of it. But you continued to have shitty booking throughout the night, so there was no point in then also putting the trash man on top of this one. It was just god damn. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I was really frustrated. I was embarrassed that the Hales were there. And you know what? I think they had a fun time live, but I don't want to talk about whatever. But I was like, this is the worst show they've put on. And the booking hurt the matches, a lot of the matches.
And it was just a train wreck. And I could see enjoying it live as a train wreck. Because it was, like, just a bunch of fucking wild, stupid shit happening. But, I mean, I don't know. Are they trying to act like this isn't a proper canon show? Because they didn't even name it. They just called it Wrestling Circus Live at South by Southwest. It almost felt like this is supposed to be a non-canon show.
I have no idea.
And that's why they did, like, no finishes, nothing that really progresses storylines, nothing that was good. Like, it just felt like it was a lot of, like, they're just doing this because they're getting paid for it.
Could be. I mean, I was just utterly disappointed in the show in general. We'll get back into it, but usually about after a match four, I was like in shell shock because we've had three fuck finishes out of the first four. And that's your undercard. Let's get into the show proper.
Right? Yeah.
Bear Brown, Terrell Tempo. I can't understand using a... I understand having a cheat finish here. I think you want to establish Brown as a heel, so I kind of understood the finish here. Terrell Tempo is a guy Biss from Inspire Pro has high hopes for, and his booking as a main eventer. His look is there. I just don't buy him in his work. I don't see him as a superstar. The crowd reacted to him big coming out. The crowd thought of him as a big star. I just don't see it. He has a good look, but it's never clicked with me. Baird is a guy I like. I felt like this was more of a walk and talk type of match. It really wasn't full of action. I think this is their both of their debuts, and they're trying to establish their characters over having a killer match. I gave it a star and 3/4. It really didn't do a whole lot for me, but I did like Brown's heel work. What did you make of it?
I somewhat agree. I didn't realize they both were debuts. I thought just Tempo was. I think Tempo is cut from a similar Roy Johnson cloth, the body guy from Progress. I think he's a guy who could get over on his charisma and his babyface side of things more than his work. So I agree with you in that regard. He's definitely not, I don't know if I would even say he's as good as Roy Johnson, but he's a guy that I wouldn't debut this way, because even if you don't quite see it yourself or maybe someone else, I think he's a guy who maybe has potential, so I really wouldn't want to debut him like this. I mean, meanwhile, maybe he doesn't lose much from a loss to Barrett Brown by cheating, but again, I wouldn't debut him this way. I think I'd have him debut almost any other way than to debut with a fuck finish loss. I mean, yes, it doesn't hurt him, but I feel like the whole, you know, getting fucked to win doesn't hurt you if you're already established, but I don't know if it really helps a guy who's debuting. Walk and talk, definitely a good way to describe the match. Not much to it, and I gave it, I think, 2-star.
Okay. What do you think of Yehi, Stallion, and James?
Good stuff from here. I think should have done a lot more to establish James, I think, as the local guy of the three. When he was in there, he looked good, except for missing the first attempt at the best moonsault ever.
Well, technically, Stallion is a local guy. He's just moving to St. Louis now.
Yeah, I mean, Stallion's all over the place, so I don't, and he has more buzz, so that's why I was kind of thinking Gregory James as your Wrestle Circus guy. Should have been your guy that you protected a little, or not protected, but established in this match. And I feel like
that's the thing. This is like his second time working Wrestle Circus.
Okay, so he's not even really a Wrestle Circus guy either.
Yeah, well, because they only use of the locals. There's only a handful they really use. I mean, yeah, James used a few more here than normal. Like it was shocking, but I guess because again. The tickets are free.
and again, because probably it was a more last minute, hey, South by Southwest is offering us money to put on this show thing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, whatever. I liked Yehi's cutoffs. I especially liked him catching a kick from James and using it to stomp Stallion. Stallion, I feel like, looked good, but didn't get to do much. The no-sell on the German suplex to set up his fiery comeback, I thought his offense looked good there. I did, when James did miss the best moonsault ever, I like that he goes for it a second time, and then when he gets the 2 count, he almost goes to attack the referee, which I thought kind of saved that, because for me, sometimes when you go back to the same spot that you miss, I kind of hate it, but I think he picked up for it there and made it look good. Yehi getting the win on James with the Koji Clutch, again, another part of why I would have wanted to have done more to shine up James here is because he's taking the submission loss. But with all that said, I thought that these guys did a really good job of integrating all three competitors to spots. It didn't feel like there was long times where guys were taking naps. It felt like they were going back and forth, mixing it up with everybody constantly. So I gave it 2.5 stars, and this was one of the better matches on the show overall.
Yeah, I know. I went 2 3/4, and I thought, you know, at first I'm like, why are you booking Yehi in a three-way? Because I think Yehi is so much better as a singles guy. But with that said, I thought Yehi was the standout here. And I did enjoy Stallion. And I like James a little bit too. I just thought, you know, why blow a Freddie Yehi who could steal the show in a three-way. But I thought he did execute it, and he did come across as a major star. I give it 2 3/4. And then we got Extra Talented and Dirty Andy Dalton versus Jordan Lennox and the Boys. Earlier in the year, they had Extra Talented versus the Boys, and they had a hell of a match, a 3.5-star, really good match, right?
Right.
Here they overrun it with booking galore. I'm like, oh, a 6-man. Okay, Andy Dalton I really like, even though I don't see how his character connects with the Extra Talented. I didn't understand. I didn't get that the connect chemistry there, but I thought they made a good 6-man team. Jordan Lennox and the Boys, you know, it was doomed from the start. The insult that Ricky Starks throws down on the boys early that you really couldn't pick up was he pretty much called them sister, and which is an old sitcom from the 80s, and he goes, yeah, and you guys aren't really that big of a smart guy, which was it was a TV show that their brother starred in, and so the crowd started calling him sister, and which is the insult was so good that it started turning the boys heel. So right off the bat, but the boys are able to get the crowd back, but we already proven these guys can work and have good match. Why fucking the whole Shane Taylor thing was a fucking mistake. And then we get the Crash Man gets involved. I still gave it 2 3/4 because the action was good. I thought Dirty Andy Dalton was really good here. He's a great hand. I loved his flip tope. I thought he was the glue that actually kept this match together. And I thought that brain buster that he did to Jordan Lennox on the floor after the match was over was freaking fantastic. What you make of the match?
First thing I want to ask you, it's Lennox and Dalton are building up a feud. The boys and Extra Talented have kind of something simmering. Is there any reason why they couldn't have switched to Lennox and Dalton, though? And you could have played up the whole Dalton Castle, Andy Dalton, and the boys thing?
It could have. But,
yeah. I mean, I know that's a stupid detail, but I just think that would have been a natural thing to have done.
But Dalton's a heel, but even though the crowd loves him, he's okay. A heel.
Yeah, because he didn't come across like a heel to me in this match, but I guess that's because, as you said, the crowd kind of loves him. So,
yeah, but what you saw him, like, he threw that straight nasty straight right on one of the boys. I mean, the brainbuster post-match was pretty heelish, even though it was in response to getting a garbage thrown at him. But that's the whole thing. You're building to a Jordan Lennox, Andy Dalton match, in a way. But we're getting the Trash Man in a no DQ match with Jordan Lennox next month.
Oh, awesome. That's going to be so much fun. So, and then another thing, I think Sister is actually like from either the 90s or the 2000s, which feels like insane because it seems like it's more recent than it was, but it also kind of plays into Extra Talented because they look like a 2000s boy band. Is that supposed to be their gimmick, that they look like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC or something?
Something like that. I like their act. They're really good, and they have a lot of Ricky Starks handles the charisma part, and Aaron Solo's a good worker, and so Starks. I mean, I'd put them in one of my top 10 tag teams if I was doing a list right now.
Yeah, no, and I think I like the act, and I even like that gimmick. I think that's great. Now the match itself, I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, it's just a mess. As I said already, Taylor should have jumped the boys before the match started. Why have Taylor come out to be a big monster just to get cut off with the double powerbomb? Just seems like such a fucking waste of trying to put the guy over. Then you get him triple dove on. It seems counterintuitive to me. Why have him come out as a monster to just get dealt with by the three guys? Then the Trash Man comes out and fucks the finish. The post-match with Dalton was good. He jumps him on the floor. But here's the thing. I probably would have given this match a dud just based on the booking. But this booking hurts the people involved. Hurts the storylines going forward.
Yeah, yeah.
I gave this -1 star because I think it actively hurt people. And I think that's my problem. The action, the wrestling, fine, but the booking theoretically hurts storylines and hurts wrestlers long term. So I have to give it a -star here.
I can buy that. I have no problem with that. I thought the action was a little too good, but the booking hurt the match. I mean it brought it down. Bottom line.
As I said, I don't even think it just hurt the match. I think it hurts the boys long term as a tag team with any credibility, which they barely have, but they were starting to have some in Wrestle Circus at least. This completely hurts.
They were having good matches, and then they made them and turned them into pussies. There's one thing to be a blowjob tag team, but you can't be pussies. Or you end up getting booed. You don't need your blowjobs booed. You want your blowjobs? Yeah, okay, they can get their ass kicked, but they show fire. Here, they didn't make a comeback. They went to the back with their tails between their legs.
Exactly. Okay. I think it hurts the boys. I think it hurts Shane Taylor. You wanted to make him look like a monster, but he couldn't even... he was not able to do anything here. Yeah, he killed the boys, but he had to sneak attack them. And then as soon as he's trying to do anything effective in the ring, he gets taken out. I mean, I think it hurts him.
And is that a babyface move to chase off another babyface tag team?
Yeah, no. I mean, no. Was he supposed to be babyface, or was he a heel? He gets jumped by three heels. Like, I just think that's not good. Then you have, yeah.
It makes Jordan Lennox look like a fair weather friend by not sticking with his team. And then just teaming up with Shane Taylor.
Yeah, and then he gets jumped by the garbage man who can care about the garbage man? I mean, yeah, I think that the booking was just too bad and hurt too many of these guys. And I think it's little shit like this that you don't pay attention to that then can make your baby faces really ineffective down the line.
Yeah, I mean, it was so sad because I thought extra talented and Dan, Andy Dalton, I thought they worked really hard in this match. And to be fucked by the Booker is just never nice. Not a nice thing. Then we got Carson versus Harry Smith. What'd you think of this?
I liked this from the start. I thought, nice, two big badasses going at each other. I think that they brought a lot of fire to the match. I loved Carson starting to slow it down and work over the leg. Because that's not something that you see a lot of times.
Oh, so let me cut off real quick.
Yeah.
So far, our count, we have one... cheap shot finish on the opening one. Clean finish on number two. A double fuck finish on number three. So where we have Shane Taylor, and then you have the trash man involved in the finish.
Yes, this is our fuck-o-meter. Okay. We're two for three.
Yeah, and so technically we're three for three if you count the double fuck in the six-man tag. So, but okay. Yeah, so they had two shit. Oh, fuck. All right.
We get into this, and I'm excited to start it out. You got the Bulldog versus the Lion. They're solid stiff strikes. Carson realizes he can't stand toe-to-toe. Starts working over the knee after a nice chop block on the apron. As I said, I love it because you don't see a lot of knee work in Hoss fights normally. So I like that he switches over to that. He goes for a low blow to set up a DDT. Looks for the Lion Tamer kind of thing, which I like. I hope that they call it the Lion Tamer with him, even if it's probably trademarked, just because it fits his gimmick and everything. And then we get a ref bump, and I'm just like, oh, fuck me. Carson goes and gets the powder, and it's in a goddamn baby powder container. Yeah. It's like, can you not just pretend it's something else? We don't want to all just know it's talcum powder. We want to think it's...
You know what? What's really annoying is him and Jack Stain had a match, and they used talcum powder. They used a powder, right? But it had a smell to it. It wasn't out of a fucking... Yeah, they actually did old school... And made it, I was like, you could smell it from the first, from the front row. And here they go to that fucking thing. I was so disappointed. Okay, go on.
Yeah, I mean, the baby powder in the baby powder bottle. I mean, sure, getting baby powder in the eyes would probably suck. But it's wrestling, and I want to suspend disbelief and imagine that you have nefarious, evil wrestler powder that you throw in people's faces. And it's not just fucking baby powder from CVS in a travel bottle. And then they can't even just do the powder. They got to wacky book the powder where Bulldog catches it, turns it back into Carson's face on accident or maybe on purpose, gets the pin, but the ref sees it. The ref doesn't even count. I don't know how the ref saw the powder in his face. He just somehow saw the powder in Carson's face while he's being pinned, and yet he's halfway knocked out.
Ref called it on his stomach, the bell. Okay, you need to get up and react. Like, hey, he has powder in his face. And then ring the bell.
Yeah,
he missed the step. Yeah,
he didn't actually see the powder. He just calls for the bell. I prefer the ref gets up. He counts the three. Bulldog got the clean win, but when Bulldog stands up, that's when the ref sees the powder, reverses the decision. You know, at least then it makes sense.
Yeah.
And you get what you want, because what you want here is to keep Bulldog looking strong. Well, you want to keep Bulldog looking strong, he gets the actual win. But the win gets reversed because of the powder instead of he calls the match off because of the powder. I gave it 2.5 stars. Liked the action. There wasn't enough of it. And then the finish, again, hurt the match.
Yeah, I went 2.25. I thought I liked the cheap shot. I liked Carson's heel work early on. But then it kind of got away from it a little bit towards the end and went back to it. But I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him as a character. I liked him working the leg. I liked the brawling. I liked Carson going back to the leg for cutoffs. I thought Harry sold it real well, except I hated his comeback, which was him using kicks, and he's planting on his bad leg. It's like, what the fuck? Why don't you just throw punches on your comeback? Why do you have to do kicks? That hurt the match for me, and that ref bump was ridiculous, and the timing was shitty. It sounded better on paper, and the execution sucked of it. So there we go, another bullshit finish. We're 3 out of the 4 matches had them, and one of them had 2 of them. And at this point, I screamed, please give me a finish that makes sense. And I'm not that snarky guy, but I got turned. Russell Circus turned me into it this day. And then we get Rachel Ellering versus Tessa Blanchard. I like this match.
Me too.
Okay. At this point, I'm like, this is the show's a thumbs down. And then this match came. I'm like, okay, they might be able to turn the tide. And these girls had a great match. Hard hitting. Rachel Ellering, second generation. Tessa Blanchard, third generation. Fucking Kevin Gill said second generation. She's third generation. God damn it. Texan. Fucking Joe Blanchard, Tully Blanchard, and now Rachel Blanchard. Her father and grandfather had huge ties to Texas, which also pissed me off a couple shows ago because, what's his name? Gavin Loudmouth?
Gavin Loudmouth.
Loud and obnoxious, yeah. Is putting over Texas stars, and we've had Rachel, who's worked, this is her second appearance. And her other, she was supposed to make a third one, but she's doing the Page movie. And don't even mention the Blanchards. Okay. That's just disrespecting talent you're using. But back to the match. I thought it was hard hitting. I thought Rachel's boot on the apron was just nasty. Tessa's stage dive ruled and was awesome looking. I love the gore on the ramp. And Rachel might be the most over babyface in Wrestle Circus. The crowd loves her. Absolutely loves her. And I hear this is her favorite place to work right now. And the crowd is, this is the first time Rachel's had an opportunity to have a kick-ass match, and they had one. And I hope we get to see these girls wrestle again. They had great chemistry. I like Tessa's heel work in this. I thought Rachel was this walking tall, badass baby face, and I thought Tessa was this sneaky heel who had, you know, showed some flash and was cocky. And I tweeted to her, how cool was it to have a kick-ass match as a third-generation Texan with ties? And she goes, it was so awesome. And I thought these girls brought it. I gave it 3 3/4. There was just got a little sloppy here and there at times. They kept it from 4 stars, but I thought these girls just brought it. Well, what you think of it?
3 1/4. I'm right there with you on almost everything, except for my only real big critique is that I really felt like Tessa got guzzled here.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I felt like she just didn't put enough into it. I mean, every big spot it felt like was except for the stage dive, was all Rachel. I feel like Rachel looked fantastic, but that's my personal taste. And the match itself, the work, everything was great. But to my personal taste, we've talked about it before, I'm not a huge fan of the really kind of over-dominant looking baby face. But I think that Rachel Ellering did a great job here playing that character. Even with a nice little spot, I thought early, that really puts that over as she is that dominant, strong, kind of domineering babyface, in that she's in an arm wringer and she uses a headbutt to break the arm wringer. And I was just like, that's really cool. You know, Tessa fighting dirty outside when she could. But it did feel like Ellering just was kicking her ass, pillar to post, all around the building, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but as I said, for my taste, not necessarily 100% my style of match. Both girls looked fantastic. And I'd love to see a match where Tessa can maybe work a stronger heat on top and really kind of maybe do some more cheating and some more nefarious means to kind of maybe get more sympathy on Rachel at some point. I'd love to see something like that. But
yeah, I totally agree with you on that part. I will agree there.
But the match itself I thought was fantastic, and I think that both girls looked great, and you're so right. I felt like this kind of was a shining beacon of light in such a bad show so far.
Yeah, I agree. Next up, and hey, that was a clean finish, right?
Yeah, which was nice.
Yeah, and so, hey. Then we got the big Hoss fight. Cobb versus Jack Stain. And then they bring out Melissa Santos as the announcer here, right?
Yeah, which I guess because of Cobb? I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't know what the connection. I just know she was booked for the show. I don't know. I guess maybe because she called the main event. Yeah, I guess she did all the Lucha Underground guys. I guess
she did. I don't know. Did she do John Morrison? I didn't notice.
Yeah, she did Morrison.
Okay, so she's doing the Lucha Underground guys. I feel like I shouldn't even say this, but maybe I'll just put it out there. From what I've heard, the reason why she's here, the reason why she's at a lot of shows, is that Cage is requesting that people fly her out for his bookings. I don't know that that's 100% true, but it seems kind of interesting because why else would she be here? Not to complain, because I think she does a really good job, but I don't know that Wrestle Circus, why do they need two ring announcers? You know, it's kind of weird.
Well, I agree. We've had her twice now. One of the shows that Cage wasn't on, so.
Oh, so maybe they're just bringing her out because they like her. I couldn't blame them.
Yeah, I don't understand having two ring announcers.
I'd rather have her full time, honestly, if I was going to pick between the two.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't know why you need to pay, fly somebody out. I would have a local person doing my thing. I mean, there's a yes. If you're running a big multi-million-dollar corporation, I understand. But you know what? If you're running an indie and you're already spending a lot of money on talent, that'd be one of the places where I'd be cutting as a ring announcer.
Well, especially if she's out there calling or doing the ring announcing off of her cell phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Which doesn't look super professional.
No, it doesn't.
But the match.
Yeah.
Mean guy match. Finally, Jeff Cobb did it. 5 stars. No. I thought that these guys looked great, beating the shit out of each other. I love Jack Stain. Great look. Great size. Great power. I think he does a good job of being able to make himself come across like he can stand toe-to-toe with these kind of worldwide traveling big guys. I think he's a perfect guy for when someone flies into Texas, like a Jeff Cobb, like a Dijak, I guess Keith Lee's from Texas, but, you know, Hansen, any of these kind of big behemoth guys that are known around the world. You put him in there with Jack Stain, and he comes across like he's at their level. Good stuff. The finish, again, fuck finish, mule kick, low blow, all this, so... It's breezy good, kind of flew by compared to the rest of the show. 2¾ star, didn't feel like the finish hurt it as much, but if it was the only fuck finish on the show, it would have been perfect, but because it's fuck finish number 5 or 6 of the night, yeah. It does start to grate on you.
Yes, exactly. It's like, why? Why do we have the earlier ones? Why do we have this one? I enjoyed it. This was the match I was most looking forward to on paper going into the show. I think they needed another 5 minutes. I don't think they got enough time to to steal the show. I think Cobb. He's finally, you know, he's really grown into having the it factor. When he comes out, he has a lot of charisma at standing on that entrance way. You know, it's like, yeah, he's cool. I really enjoyed the shoulder block challenge where they're running over each other. I thought that was really cool. I love Dane taking out the first row. It looked like a bowling alley when he went into the, when the Cobb got, was it Cobb or was it Dane who got sent into the first row?
It was Cobb.
Yeah, it looked like something off of a war movie because it looked like bodies were flown everywhere and stuff. But yeah. Did you feel like they should have got a few more minutes?
For sure. As a guy who loves a fucking Hoss fight, I would have liked to have seen this go much longer, honestly.
Yeah, and then of course we get this, you know, low blow finish, which I guess that was the MO. I guess that was the trend. Just killing me. Then we got Jervis Cottonbelly, Joey Ryan, Scorpio Sky. I don't know if you picked this up on the thing, but I saw it on the iPay-per-view because, or on the video on demand, because I saw it live, so I was looking for it. There was this special needs kid there.
Oh yeah.
And, did you see Sky bump for him?
Yeah, I saw him.
Okay. Scorpio Sky takes a bump for the kid. I thought that was really cool. And it was funny as hell, but I mean, even if it's not because he's special needs, it's just funny watching Scorpio Sky take a bump into a kid cheering. It was fun. I thought that was really neat, and then really, I probably made the kids month, you know? Super cool thing. Clearly, this is the match that got over most live to the crowd. I still feel they've turned the Sideshow Championship into this comedy belt. If that's what they're going for, great. But I did think the comedy spots worked here. And I thought this was one of the more compelling Joey Ryan matches I've seen, where his comedy wasn't overbearing. It was actually funny. I thought him and Jervis had a really good chemistry together. And I thought Sky really was the glue that held this match together. You were 2.25. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it. But I thought it was a lot better than I was going to expect. Well, what you thought? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty close. 2.5. Give him a lot of credit for bringing the crowd up after what you could say was a semi-abysmal showing so far. Last two matches in a row were okay, but still one fuck finish. The women's match was solid, but I felt like they really gave the crowd what they wanted. It kind of hit the spot. You know, there's some wild spots, there's some comedy, the finish. I thought, again, though, I mean, this is almost another kind of wacky, fucky finish. I mean, yes, it was clean in the end, but you have Jervis gets the pin on Scorpio, then Ryan comes in and tries to spin Scorpio, but he told us he can't, and Jervis gets a roll-up out of nowhere on it. So, again, that finish on paper wouldn't be a big deal if it wasn't following five other wonky fuck finishes. So, the match itself, good. Crowd loved it, but the booking, and once more, I'm just like, did they really feel the need? Like, was Joey Ryan wanting to be semi-protected? He couldn't take just a clean pin? And, yeah, just the whole thing was a little off in that regard. Not a match that I'm going to, you know, have on my match of the year list, but I think this crowd, this show, really needed this match.
Yeah, I will agree. Next up was Sammy Guevara versus Johnny Nitro, Johnny Morrison, Johnny Mundo. What do you think of this?
Loved the match itself for the spots, everything. I think Sammy kind of suffered from not being able to play heel to a clear-cut babyface. He is kind of a babyface now. The crowd likes him, but he you know, he's kind of doing his thing. The mirror spots in the beginning I thought was a little, I don't know, not necessarily. I mean, they're trying to show off like that they're twins or similar, and it always kind of, I don't get it when you have guys that are just so dissimilar. I mean, I don't necessarily think of John Morrison and Sammy Guevara as very similar.
Well, part of the backstory, maybe it's because I watched Sammy Guevara's YouTube videos, is he's a big Morrison fan.
Okay.
And he was talking about how he watched his second row versus Morrison, and they showed the clip. I can't remember what the hell he was doing. And they had just wrestled each other in New Orleans. So I think they came up with some spots they thought they could do mirror spots in this one.
Okay. That I can get. I liked where Morrison goes for a kick, Sammy catches it, and he does the kind of flip him over. But when he's flipping back over, Sammy sets up his knee for, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be a hit him in the face or hit him somewhere in the body, but I liked that a lot. I thought that was a cool spot. Lots of cool spots, but I just think that someone here should have been face. They should have just committed to being face here. And I think it should have probably just been Sammy. And I think that hurt my enjoyment of the match slightly, but didn't necessarily ruin it. That's why I ended up 3 stars. I really enjoyed it, but I didn't necessarily think that it felt like a really big-time epic encounter just because I didn't have heel-face dynamic to invest in as much.
And we got another low-blow finish to protect Sammy.
Right.
So there's another screw job.
But it almost, I mean, how much Morrison did it on Lucha Underground, it almost feels like his gimmick. But, yeah. Again, on a show where it's all mule kick, low-blow bullshit, it does
kind of
suck.
Well, it doesn't stand out. Yeah, it doesn't stand out. It's just like, oh, another, you know, like, I didn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, great, another fuck finish. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.25. I kind of enjoyed the mirror spots. I didn't bother me. I kind of liked how Morrison flipped the table, and it was they're both doing the big finger at each other. I thought it went a little too long. I would have been more than happy like one or two instead of like five tries at it. We got it. You're both being dicks. It's like they're both dicks that the crowd likes. So it was like a weird dynamic. I like the big spots. Sammy needs to retire his stupid. Two things that he needs to retire. He needs to drop that chin lock spot. It's fine for what it is every now and then. And he's another spot he's been going to is the Shawn Michaels Ric Flair spot. Instead of saying I love you, he goes, but I hate you, or I don't love you, or drop it. It's stupid. It doesn't help the story of the match at all. It's a spot that he pops the crowd, I will admit, but it sucks.
It comes across cosplay too.
Yeah, exactly. Like be Sammy Guevara. 3.25, but you know, it was what it was. I mean, so it was a good match, but it was, people I think were expecting at this point, they were hoping it was going to steal the show, and it didn't. Matt Hardy, Colt Cabana.
I feel like we already talked about it enough.
Yeah, I gave it a half a star.
I gave it a star.
Okay, there we go. Terrible.
They played to the rafters. You know what I'll give them credit for? They were doing those big, huge, comically gigantic punches where you're playing to the rafters. The only problem is they're in a building that doesn't have rafters.
Yeah, there you go. Another fuck finish.
Of course.
Then we get Cage and Riddle. I gotta say, I really liked this. I gave it 3.75. I felt they could have gone a little longer. It felt like they were short. And like I've heard people saying, oh, well, and again, I got to remind people, this show started at like 8 o'clock, and it was booked to go from 8 to like 1. And people said, oh, the main event was short because they were running out of time. The show ended at 12:30, so they had a half hour still left to play on that 1 o'clock time frame. So it wasn't because of people running long or what have you. I felt the match could have gone another 3 minutes, and I think I would have given it 4 stars. I loved Riddle going for all these near submissions and the flying arm bars and knee bars, and I liked I liked the dynamic of Cage using his strength to escape the submissions, and I thought they had a really good match. I wasn't looking forward to it. I mean, I thought they'd have a good match, but I thought it was a lot more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. And I thought it played better on video on demand than it did live. But then again, I think it was because I was so pissed off with all the finishes going into the main event. And the semi-main really was the ultimate fuck-off fans moment that I got. And even though I know that's not what they're intending it, but that's how I felt. What did you make of this match?
Similar opinion, except for I don't necessarily think I would have gone any longer. I think these are both guys who are better in shorter matches. I've never really seen a super good, you know, plus 20-minute cage match. So I don't...
Yeah. I don't want a 20. I thought the Steiner driver just came out a little too quick. I would have liked them building a little bit more to it.
Can agree with that. And that sentiment I can see. I think that, yeah, you're right, that the Steiner driver felt like it came out of nowhere. And it felt like Cage popped up instantly afterwards as if he hadn't just been in a big time fight. So I think that there was those two things that could have really helped out the match overall. I'm with you. I just think that there's some stuff that Riddle, while you could say makes sense to someone who understands, doesn't make sense in others. Like him taking a big waist lock takedown on Cage, for me, doesn't make sense, because if you look at the two guys, I mean, Cage is just so massive. And for me to believe that he could take him down with ease the way that he does, or in this match, I can only believe that Cage is kind of going along with it. So that's like a small issue where it's Riddle needs to think about adjusting his style sometimes based around who he's wrestling with. And it's Cage. So that's the problem with Cage, is that Cage has no concept of that. Like Cage is just going. He's Mr. Get My Shit In. That's his nickname for a reason. So he's he's more than willing to go and have very
even
little
though,
selling.
I feel he's improved on that though this year.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And he's a guy who I think that a lot of companies would be smart to start thinking about as a guy that you can even build your brand around, like Russell Circus is doing here. When they first put the belt on him, I think we both were kind of like, eh. But you look at him, he's impressive, he's big, he can give you an epic fight feel in a quick main event that doesn't necessarily have to go past 15 minutes. And the added bonus is the dude is fucking toxic. There's no chance in hell that WWE is signing this guy anytime soon because they know that his piss is radioactive and they don't want this guy in NXT. So you can put your belt on him and build your company around him as a draw. And I mean, he's kind of a freak show because people want to see him, but he also can deliver solidly in the ring. So, I mean, he's a guy that I'm booking at the top of my card for sure if I'm a Wrestle Circus right now. I loved his big kind of spots that where he's crunching Riddle back and forth with gut busters into back breakers. I think it looked like something out of a fucking animation in a video game sequence as he's just like, boom, boom. I liked the finish as he attempts Weapon X, gets countered with the Yoshitonic, and then hits the Steiner screwdriver, which is his big finish. But I would have, as you said, I would have liked some setup. I would have liked him to beat up Riddle a little bit more and call it out, because I do love when he does the full ode to Scott Steiner and he just says, he ain't getting up from this one, and busts out the Steiner screwdriver. I think that's a great finish. 3.5 stars. I thought it delivered solidly well, and I think that Cage is a guy, as I said, I think that Wrestle Circus could do good to continue using him as their top guy.
Let's talk about Matt Riddle. Do you feel he's kind of regressed this year, or is it just me? And not, like, regressed badly. It just seems... He seems more formula addict this year. And that's going to happen the more you wrestle. You start using more formula. But it just seems like he's more into working the big 12, 13-minute sprint now, as opposed to a long match. And we seem always... A lot of the spots are becoming pretty, like, you can call them a mile away now.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think it's a lot about who he's working with. And he's kind of stretching his legs more. I felt like for a long time in Evolve, they were booking him against guys where he would get different, interesting, unique challenges with people who can bring out more different styles. And meanwhile, yeah, as you said, when he's out on the road and people are kind of expecting him to deliver in a main event dream match setting, he is going to go back to what he knows works, and that's what he's doing and just delivering. So I think it's a mix of both though, because I think stuff like two back-to-back matches with Speedball on the WXW weekend, that the matches come across almost completely different, kind of shows that he does have a depth to his wrestling there, and he can bring totally different matches. Meanwhile, a match here with Cage, and you compare this to, say, Cage's match with Fred Yehi, or any other Matt Riddle match this year, and it does come across like, oh yeah, I know where it's coming next. Oh, I know what spot he's going to do here. I know what he's going to do there. So I can definitely see, but I think the knife kind of cuts both ways, as they say.
Do you think he's in the consideration for top 10 in the world right now?
That's a tough one. Probably not for me.
Yeah, I don't see him in my top 10. Like last year, he was in position in my top 5, I think. And that's what I meant by regressing, as in I haven't seen anything that's blown me away this year from Riddle, you know?
Yeah, I mean, last year I had him number 20 for my Wrestling with Words 100, and I think I could put him in the top 15 now. So for me, I feel like he's moving forward in some ways, but I get what you're saying, that he can be formulaic.
Yeah, it feels like he's more like, I don't even know, like last year I felt he was churning out 4-star matches. This year it feels like he's churning out 3.5-star matches.
Yeah, that's definitely true, but I think it's also part of his thing is he's got a commitment to a psychology that is short matches.
Yeah.
And I do know that does sometimes lead itself to not being higher rated or higher appreciated matches. Just because, you know, you don't have the time to tell the story as in depth when you're going so short, but that's the stories that he wants to tell.
Yeah, so. That's true. Good point. And overall, I'm going to have to give the Wrestle Circus, I'm going to have to give it a thumbs down. Yeah. I just did not like the show. There's some aspects that we liked, but man, the booking was abysmal and actually hurt the show. So I'm going to give it a thumbs down. What about you?
I'd probably give it a thumbs even further down than you. I mean, I was, even the matches that you were higher on, I was a little bit lower on. I think that this was a slog at times for me to watch. I think that the booking, like I said, actively hurt matches, actively hurt wrestlers in long term. I hope that it's a diversion from the norm just because they are doing a special show for South by Southwest, and it's not going to become the way that these shows are from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, before this show, the last two were just absolutely killer shows. I mean, legitimately awesome shows. They had a hiccup here or there, like a bad match, but for the most part, the matches were kick-ass. And then this thing was just not. And in the next one there's a lot of fun matches, don't get me wrong, but the star power isn't as high as it had been on the shows.
Yeah, that is another thing, as you said there. They're missing star power, they're missing cohesion to the stories, they're missing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you know, like, we're getting Cage and Morrison's the main event. We've seen that on Lucha Underground, I want to say, so it's not a match I would have booked, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm not into that. I didn't like it on Lucha Underground very much, so... Yeah, I would definitely not be booking that match.
I'm excited for Sammy Guevara and Matt Sydal. I think that should be really fun.
I could definitely see that'll be interesting.
I'm interested in seeing Rachel Ellering wrestle Taya from Lucha Underground.
That's another one that could definitely deliver.
Then we have Sammy Callahan and the Christ Brothers versus Desmond Xavier, Shane Strickland, and I can't remember who the third guy is.
Oh, I'm not sure. I haven't even seen the cards. So
yeah. So I mean, I still think they're gonna put it on a good show. So we'll see. Yeah, I think I'm expecting a bounce back show. So hopefully we'll get it. I was really disappointed. And live, I've still enjoyed myself, but it was just like the booking really took a tell on me and stuff. I didn't want to let the wrestlers know. I was still cheering my ass off, and I lost my voice for a day. But I was really that the booking was just atrocious, and I hope they're not like the Emperor, where it has no clothes on, where all the positive feedback is just they think they can't do no wrong. Because that was a bad show. And a lot of the people were still putting it over on Twitter. I just could not believe it. And that. But hey, what do you got? Anything you got to plug, Tim?
No, just Lucha Undead. Other podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yep, follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week, guys. And we'll take a break for next week because I'll be in Mania. Weekend and stuff. Have a good one.
Reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions of death. It's so obvious.